This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Giddy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Just want to do things my own way, you know.
Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is your old friend Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, to all four corners of the globe, here from Trinidad World Recording Studios in beautiful Fort Worth, Texas. You're thinking to yourself, at long last, my questions about music, the course of the creative universe, etc., all these uncertain times are now going to be, these issues are going to be addressed and discussed in a digestible manner by my good friend Phil. Wherever you may be, huddled over a laptop in the Middle East, listening on an iPhone in Buenos Aires. Yes, I got your email. And to our new fans up there in Illinois that I got emails from recently, thank you all. Thank you all. Keep them coming. I read every single one. Phil of PhilPritchett.com. It's a small universe out there, folks. Indeed, a universe that I stumbled upon making somewhere in, seventh grade somewhere, where I started playing music. Oh, good grief, man. Oh, my goodness. Man, I've found myself just reliving a lot of my, see, I've got all these kids, you know what I mean? Do y'all know that? I got five kids. I don't talk about it a whole lot. It annoys me to some extent when people talk about their own kids, because everyone thinks their own kids are great and all that, and I appreciate that, but, and I don't use it as an excuse or a badge of honor, although I'm very proud, but I got a big family. What can I say? I got a huge family here. Great kids all, but you know, they're growing up, and you know, as a parent, you start to think, you know, they start going through stuff in school, and you kind of think back, well, hey, what was I thinking at that age? Or, man, it's really the first time in my life, when you start really revisiting some things and some issues and some, stuff you went through, you know, in grade school or middle school or whatever. So, a lot of it comes back to music. You know, we got guitars and stuff in the house. The kids are curious about what I do for a living. It's hard to explain. I don't know. Everyone's like, oh, Philly, is your kids into music? I'm always like, oh, kind of. You know, they're interested in it. They like music. They play the guitar a little bit, but I don't know. And, you know, frankly, I don't even know if I want to encourage it. I mean, it's a fun thing, but, oh, gosh. I'm going to force music on them. I always threaten. I'm going to say I'm going to force music down their throats so they'll rebel and go to law school or medical school and, you know, rebel against it. Kind of like that old Far Side cartoon I talk about where the two boys are crawling under the circus tent and said the sons of Barnum and Bailey ran off to join corporate America. You know, that's my plan. That's the plan I'm working on. No, but it's got me thinking about... you know, when I started in playing music, taking guitar lessons, I took a couple in seventh grade or sixth grade, started back then. You know, I've got this new song that's going to be on the new album that I'm very excited about. It's a lot different. It's a lot sillier. I feel like my new record's got a lot lighter humor to it, maybe. You know, you look back, like High Tide in the Heartland and the Bullfighters, it's pretty heavy. It's pretty intense, right? Which is all well and good. I'm a heavy, intense guy, but I'm also fun too, I think. Right? Anyway, got this one called We're in a Band. Just going back to seventh grade and thinking about it a lot, man. Parachute Pants, being into Van Halen. I think the recent Van Halen tour has a lot to do with it as well. David Lee Roth being out there with Van Halen on tour and trying to explain to my children why this is important. Although I don't know if they get it. You know what struck me, though, is one of my kids is learning how to play the guitar a little bit. And I was asked, she asked me, well, what makes a guitar player really good? Someone says, oh, he's like this great guitar player. And so of course, I took a look at the playlists, our iTunes playlist the girls have there in the house, the kids list. I mean, there's just nary a guitar player to be found on any of this stuff. I mean, it's all dance-based, loop-based music. There's no, like, you're not just like, ooh, that guy for Foster the People, man, he can shred. You know, it's just kind of a beat, you know, it's just the Gautier song and all. I mean, it's just, there's no guitar playing on any of this stuff. So I cue up some YouTube. I'm like, all right, you want to see some guitar playing? So we start taking Phil's tour through YouTube. Phil's tour through YouTube. And you know what I found to my surprise, to my horror? Man, some of this guitar stuff from the 80s is kind of hard to explain to a young adolescent. I mean, what are they to make of one Edward Van Halen? Cigarette in mouth, hair everywhere, sweating profusely, shirtless, jumping around doing the leg splits with the crazy-looking guitar, just shredding and running around, swigging from a bottle of whiskey off his amp. You know, and I of course, I'm just like, check it out, yeah. She's just like, this guy's a crazy person. I'm just a crazy person. You know, it was, I found it, words, there were no words I could use to explain the artistry, to explain the talent of Edward Van Halen. It was, I think it was kind of a confusing thing for her to see. Then I said, well, I'll go a little more old school. I said, well, you've heard of like Jimi Hendrix, right? She goes, oh, yeah, I've heard of Jimi Hendrix. So I'm looking on there. What are you going to show him from Jimi Hendrix? You know, an interview or something? I see, there it is. Hendrix, you know, Monterey Pop Festival, burning the guitar. I'm like, all right, here's Hendrix. So I put it on there. And, man, you just forget how, just watching my innocent child watch this stuff. Now she's older. She's not young. I mean, but the look on her face as Hendrix smashes his guitar, lights it on fire, plays between his legs, you know, plays with his teeth, and is chewing gum the whole time and out of tune and just, it's just bizarre. You've seen the Monterey Pop, you know, Hendrix lights his guitar on fire and he's gyrating around. I was just like, oh, I kind of forgot it was like this, you know. Again, I find it difficult to explain. She's looking at me like, why the hell would you like this? I'm like, it's rock and roll, man. Come on. It's, you know, difficult to explain. So, man, I have been filled with guitar nostalgia as I try to explain to a new generation what guitar playing is, how it should be done, and why we all love it. And although I find great satisfaction and enjoyment out of watching these guys play solos and stuff like that, I wonder, man, I wonder if it'll just continue to be that way. There's so much written these days about electronic music, dance music. And indeed, man, the word was that, you know, recent festivals like Coachella and stuff like that, and you even hear about, like, clubs and large theaters and venues here here in town, you know, the DJs will come, the Deadmau5 and Girl Talk and you know, kind of the mashup DJ guys, and man, these things are just packed with people. And some people at Coachella were just like, you know, Wilco was great, or whoever was out there, Flaming Lips and stuff like that. But the real party was happening at the electronic shows because it's just all about community, people dancing around and stuff like that. So who knows, man? I fear for the future of the guitar. Of course, it'll always be around, but you wonder if it'll have that impact. I think it's got to come back at some point with someone very talented and very unique. But it's really been away for a long time. Even in recent years, I mean, Coldplay, Dave Matthews, they're not known for guitar as much, even though Dave Matthews is a fine guitar player. It's just not, it's more beat-driven, it's more atmospheric, it's ambient, it's dance, some of it's danced-infused, not Dave Matthews, but other popular acts. So I don't know, man. It's electronic music is kind of like you'd think I would feel about it. I'm not too interested in it. But I'll tell you, man, I think people are way off by discounting it, saying it's a fad or something like that. That's what they said about hip-hop and rap when it came out. And it's just kind of a new thing. And, man, that's where the young people are at these kinds of things, the raves and all that kind of thing. Which makes me feel very old and out of it, but that's the way it is. And everyone's like, well, man, that's not real music. It's not art, man. What the, man, you gotta just record a 2-inch tape, you know, and a have your old tube amp and all that. And hey, look, I'm with you. I love all that stuff. But the fact is, man, at some point in the 60s, you had guys like Andy Warhol, you know, painting a picture of a soup can. Well, what did all the old, Van Gogh and Monet guys painting their impressionist paintings and painting with the knife and the thick paint and all that. Warhol just paints a soup can and says, that's art. And they're like, well, that's not art. You can't just paint a Campbell soup can. He's like, oh, really? I just did and sold it for $20 million or whatever. I mean, it does move on, man. People's tastes, people just aren't interested in kind of the old. I bring up the analogy of at what point, you know, people went to see Mozart symphonies when people didn't have the ability to play records in their house. They had to go to a concert hall to hear Mozart or hear a symphony. And at some point, some guy came out with a new, classical piece, a new symphony, and thought everybody show up like they showed up to see the Beethoven thing. And people just weren't as interested, you know. Say, hey, man, it's a bunch of violins and cellos. You know, we've heard Beethoven, we've heard Mozart. Why would we come see you? And I wonder if we're getting. I sometimes wonder if we're getting to a point like that. That man, we've just had so much. We've had Hendrix and Eddie Van Halen and Eric Clapton and Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page and just guitar guys. And there's few. Tom Morello sticks out to me, the guy from Rage Against the Machine. Years ago, and he's still doing stuff now, but he did some really interesting stuff, just effects and things like that, that was interesting and a little more recent. But, you know, that was late 90s, what, early 2000s or something. But you don't, at least the kids in my house, and, we spend time at the kids' camp in Colorado a lot. I don't hear a lot of, man, this guy's a hot new guitar player. You just don't. It's just totally not part of the conversation. It's just hip-hop, it's dance music, it's electronic. It's here to stay, man. So I don't know. I don't know what the future is. And the guys you do know, the young kids that are playing guitar, yeah, they're just playing, you know, Freebird. They're playing the old stuff. I mean, people still do buy violins and learn how to play Beethoven. I mean, that's true. But there's not a lot of violinists that I know that are coming up and just, you know, forging and writing their own new, incredible, imaginative, and compelling symphonies that everybody's talking about, and playing the violin in a different way, or adding a string to it, or something. I don't know. They might be out there, but I don't know who they are, and I fear there's a reason for that. So who knows, man, the future of the guitar. I ponder it as I look at the youth of today, and I try not to be sad. Of course, I come from that tradition, but I'm reminded every day in my own house and out there playing on the road that the times they are a-changing, as the old song goes. So we'll see where it heads, man. See if any, maybe some new guitar kid will show up here soon and bring it all back home. There's a couple little Dylan references for you here to end this segment. Well, stay tuned, folks. We have our guest segment coming up next. Right now, the Pritchett Podcast couch is empty. Who will come in and sit with us and join us and, wax rhapsodic on the world and their life? Stay tuned and we'll check it out next.
So you ain't gonna see me out here rolling by. So you ain't gonna see me out on the town. So you ain't gonna kick me when I'm down. Cause I changed the kind of car I drive.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Broadcasting in high definition audio, or something quite like it. All over the world. From here, Fort Worth, Texas, Trinidad World Recording Studios. It's been a while since we've had the podcasts rolling. We took a break a few weeks back, for a couple of weeks, but then we are back in full force. Back rolling again, enlightening your musical lives out there. Thanks for joining us again this week, folks. Well, what happens when you go wandering the halls here at Trinidad World Recording? You bump into people who are knowledgeable of the business, who are out there moving around in all facets. Well, he is back again this week to talk more about the music business, country music business, and the film business in that. He is back from Nashville, Tennessee, the Country Recording Seminar. Is that right, what it is? In Nashville?
It's called CRS.
John Reynolds, our filmmaker, compadre from
whatever you can
hall.
Come up with.
Yeah, across the hall. Right. A couple of weeks ago, I was intrigued. John said, man, I'm going to CRS in Nashville, which I knew. I said, oh, that's the recording.
Country radio seminar is what
radio
is.
Seminar. So yeah, all the radio station bigwigs will go to Nashville and be fed by hand from Nashville's greatest artists. Have their feet rubbed by whoever's up there trying to get on the radio. That's always been the image of it. You know?
What is it? It's just a big seminar where a lot of the program directors and people on air talent and everything, they go up and they go through. So they have some classes, some seminars, learning about trends and things happening in radio and in country music.
Some panels and discussions and things.
Exactly. But then also at the same time, all of the record labels are all up there, and they are
just
pushing their stuff to everybody. So you get to performances by everybody who's gonna do something big this year, or people that maybe have been off the radar. They all go. Sometimes they even go under their own money and go.
Yeah, just Lee Greenwood
just walking the hall,
handing out sandwiches.
Right.
Well, you know, it bears just kind of pointing out here. I said this the other day, and I've said it before on the show, but it's been a while. Man, it's just the existence of Nashville country music and its dependency on radio, its success or fail, is so gigantic, and there's so many country music stations, not only in Texas, but just everywhere. And to illustrate that point, you just look at, like, oh, the new single from, name a band, Gautier or whatever's kind of hot. Like, oh, it's on these charts and on these R&B and rock stations. You know, it might get played 2,000 times in the United States on all these stations. Like, that's how many spins it had. And then you look over here and, like, oh, here's the number one country single, whoever it is, and Lady Antebellum, and it's been spun like 7,500 times.
Yeah.
And you're just like, wow. I mean, it's so much bigger.
Right.
And people don't realize that, but you do drive through Illinois or Nebraska or Texas or Louisiana. Yeah, you might get a modern rock station here and there. But you're going to go through 12 country stations of various sizes, AM, FM, So it is a big deal, and so there's a lot riding on those. You got some new act, your manager, you're going to go to this convention, and you're going to want to meet the heads of, all these Texas stations and all over there. Hey, this is our new guy. He's got the single out. We mailed it to you. Oh, yeah, I love it.
Exactly.
There you were as well.
Yeah,
in the mix.
I was there, on business, but it was really, my main focus was something other than just meeting all the
big players.
There, but they were all there. So it was an amazing.
So who'd you run across? Did you go to some little
everybody? You've named them already. Lady Antebellum.
Well, do you walk through? Are there tents out in the street?
It's in the convention center.
Okay, okay.
So convention center, and then there are different events that are private events that are thrown all over the city.
Right, little parties and stuff.
Exactly.
Like that.
So after you have your convention during the day, at night, it's
so we're all these acts shake, running up and shaking your hand, thinking you were somebody.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just coming up and just go, hey, what's going on?
Who
man?
Are you? It was great. I
who are you
I
with? So, yeah, cool, cool, man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, that's the difference between country music and rock and roll. You know,
that's what they were saying. Even like rap and R&B is that no other industry has something like this where they're
glad
literally
hands.
There and people are so nice. I mean, I don't care who you were, they were very nice to you.
Yeah.
And
they have
very
to be. It's their livelihood.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, country music is not a most music, successful music, rock and roll, hip hop. There's a large seed of rebellion.
Right.
Nirvana, Jim Morrison,
sure.
Elvis Costello, The Clash.
They bite the hand
you know,
that feeds
you. F you, we're doing our thing here. You know, and
the country's not like that.
Yeah, if you see Kenny Chesney walking down the street, say, "Hey, I really love your stuff." He's gonna go, "Oh, thanks a lot, man. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for coming on the show." Yeah, you know, they're gonna.
It's a different.
Garth Brooks is a nice guy. You always hear that,
right?
All you ever hear about, Kurt Cobain or Elvis Costello, or just because Neil Young is that he's a jerk. I'm just like, well, that's just the difference between rock and roll.
It is.
We love you. They just shoot you the finger and keep walking. Mm-hmm. So here you are in Nashville, where you can get your feet massaged and get a free sandwich from Lee Greenwood and right. Ronnie Millsap handing out free pencils or something like that.
Is that because he's blind?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
It's something with his new single on it, new marketing scheme.
Right.
You know, it's funny. I said Ronnie Millsap and Lee Greenwood because I did run into both of those guys through my old friend Jim Beavers, who worked at Virgin Records, which isn't there anymore. But those two guys were on there. Mm-hmm. And, man, he just said this kind of the same thing you're saying. He goes, man, these guys just live at their peak, man. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, dude, they just come into the office with this entourage thinking that they're what happened. And they just can't understand why they're not on the radio.
Right.
I got this song, man. It's a hit. It just sounds like the Oak Ridge Boys. He just goes, man, this would have been a hit in like 1982.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
Speaking of the Oak Ridge Boys.
It's 2000. And don't you even listen to the radio now? It's just like, don't even, but he said they live, they don't shrug their shoulders and say, well, you know, I'm not really as big as I used to be. Because they don't have that attitude. They just, mm-hmm. they live there. So, jeez, I can see him out there.
Right. But, it was a great opportunity. I got to really meet and hear perform and hang out with pretty much everybody. Every day, your lunch was sponsored by a different label. And the first day I was there, my lunch was sponsored by Universal Nashville. And on their label are actually some Texas guys.
Yeah. They're huge. I think they got everybody. Well, there's about a million different smaller labels under Universal. Who's on there?
Yeah, Randy Rogers.
Yeah,
you know, which is a Texas guy. Oh, you know, who was there? Their big luncheon was held at the Ryman. So, you know, if anybody knows what the story is of the Ryman, you know, it was
home of the Grand Old Opry.
Home of the Grand Old Opry. It was originally a church, and then became the home of the Grand Old Opry. Not the first home, but the second home or third home or whatever.
Right.
But families would grab their sack lunch and go, and you know, you'd bring your kids and you'd go inside and you'd sit down. You'd spend the whole day there listening to the radio show, and everybody who's anybody in country music.
Playing the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, and finished their career there. I mean, that's just that. Once you remember the Grand Ole Opry, you're obligated to play there several times a year to keep your membership at the Grand Ole Opry.
Uh-huh.
So everybody played there. Hank Williams, Patsy Cline, everybody even now, you know, that's where they want to play. But so they sponsored this lunch. So I grabbed my sack lunch, which is like a ham sandwich or something, a bag of chips, and you walk across the street.
Lovingly made by Alan Jackson.
Exactly. Yeah.
Extra mayo, just like you like it.
And you walk across the street.
Just don't tell him you're not in the radio business.
That's right. And then
you stand in line. Is it a free ticket show, or do you?
Well, it's part of if you go to this conference.
Okay.
You go to the conference, whatever it takes to go to this conference. But as that, so you walk across the street and you go in, you sit down, and Universal guy comes out and, you know, thanks everybody for being here, and we're going to show you our showcase of our artists that we're really proud of having this year, and we'd like to introduce you to our first artist. And they call out the first artist, and so you don't really know who these people are, who it is, and
they're up and comers,
exactly. You know, for instance, like Randy Rogers was one of the guys there, and he came out, but the first artist was a young up-and-comer who just recently had one of his first songs that he had written himself, go to number one, come out. In fact, actually, ASCAP gave him an award for best new songwriter, and it was George Strait.
As someone you might have heard of. Right. So what was the catch there?
Well, the deal was is that, you know, he comes out with two other guys, and he plays three songs acoustically, one being the single that he won for writing with he wrote one with his son, and then this one he wrote, and he I guess it was his first number one hit that he actually wrote himself. Yeah, so you think of George Strait, not as a sure. songwriter, you know, but yeah, he's finally doing it, and
that's right.
But they presented him with an award, and he played the Ryman. It was the first time he had ever played the Ryman, and so.
See, I find that hard to. How could that possibly be? That's a ridiculous statement. How could George Strait have never played the Ryman?
And supposedly the backstory is that he wanted to play the Grand Ole Opry, and they didn't let him play because of maybe he was a little
too good looking, too 80s. When did he start? In 82? Yeah, right.
Like in the late 70s. Yeah. And so he vowed to never play the Ryman, or never not the
play
Ryman,
the Grand
never
Ole Opry.
Play the Grand Ole Opry.
Had nothing to do with it.
He didn't play the Ryman, and then when they moved over to the Gaylord, he never played there. But from what I understand, he did do a music video there with Alan Jackson, or they did something there.
Something.
But this was his first time to ever play the Ryman, and he played it acoustic, which you never see George play acoustic.
No,
He played the acoustic guitar, sat down, played three songs, and it was just crazy.
Yeah, that's great. You know, man, that's really special there.
It was. You know,
witnessing and history.
Exactly. You know, the quality there in the Ryman. If anybody's ever been there, you've got to go see a show at the Ryman. It is the best
it's
the best music venue, though, literally in the world, and I'm not just saying that. It really is. They said the acoustics in it are amazing, and there's all kinds of reasons why, you know, plus the history of why it's an incredible place.
Right.
But, you know, I sat there and you know, saw
George Strait. Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Man of a million hits.
Yeah, and then the next couple of days, every day it was somebody different. Alan Jackson was one day.
So you went to the Ryman every day?
No, the Ryman was
for
only
lunch?
One day.
Oh, okay.
And then inside the
convention
was going on, right? Alan Jackson was there, and then Faith Hill was there as well. And so,
great.
So you know, just some kind of new kids.
Yeah, new kids trying to break in. You know, it's so funny. Yeah. It's so funny that it's interesting. Of course, it's business. It's part of a business, of course. But yeah, it's amazing that those guys will go up there and
it is
and they glad handle like that. You're like, well, if they don't, they'll just play whoever is there.
Yeah.
And that's got to get under their skin a bit.
I don't know. You look at these guys that have got 30-year careers or 20-year careers like Alan Jackson, George Strait.
What do they need to do it for? I mean, they don't need to.
Well, I don't think they know what else to do. That's what they are.
Yeah, it's what they are. It's what they always do. Yeah, I guess
that's
right.
And so, you know, I think it's going to be hard for like an Alan Jackson to go play a small little venue, you know, in Fort Worth, Texas. You know,
yeah.
So he has to do what he can to keep that.
Keep
deal.
It going.
Kind of like what you were talking about with Ronnie Millsap and Lee Greenwood.
Yeah,
guys.
They live at their peak, man. Yeah, they got a new single. It's got to be number. Was get it to number one. That's the goal.
I mean, George Strait's as good as he ever was.
Sure.
So is Alan Jackson or Faith Hill or all these people. I mean, they're just the music industry changed around them.
Right.
But, man, it was just a dynamite show. If you guys ever go to my Facebook page, Midland Creative, you'll see midlandcreative.com. I have pictures of everybody.
Yeah.
I had full access on stage, and I just have some of the most incredible photos of these guys ever.
Oh, cool, man.
So,
take
a look at that.
I don't think I've checked all those out. I've seen a couple here at the studio. So you also ran into our old friend Miranda Lambert, and she had showcase.
Yeah, you know, we had tickets as one of the things was to go see Lady Antebellum concert.
Right.
And we had tickets to go see that, and we were hopping on our bus to go take us down the street to the Coliseum to go watch the Lady Antebellum show, and we get on, and we're driving for about 5-10 minutes, and we're looking at each other like, this place is only a block down the street, where are we going? And I asked the guy who's there, looked very official, and he goes, oh, you're on the bus for the private Miranda Lambert show. And I was like, okay, great.
You're right.
You know, and again, I mean, these guys, they love you, and so they said, just come on with us, and we'll take you to the late Antebellum show afterwards. So we went to a private show with Miranda Lambert.
Where was that? Just at some little restaurant?
There's a leather goods store that she's a big fan of. I guess they make boots and leather bags, but it was literally 50 people.
Yeah.
And in this warehouse, and it was her, Chris Young and Jared Neiman, which were on her tour.
Yeah.
And they just did an acoustic song swap thing, and It was awesome.
Oh, cool, I mean, man.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Was Jordan Powell there?
He was there. Yeah. I talked to Jordan. Yeah, you know, actually, I texted you.
He's always, if it's just her, night. He's still there. You know, yeah. I, a lot of this stuff, I'm like, well, he probably wasn't there. I'm like, no, I think he's just like her road manager.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was there with the guitar. And he.
My
he
old road manager for everybody keeping score, Jordan. Yeah. How you doing, Powell? He listens.
He was telling me that literally when they got there, she went into the catering van, mm-hmm. got the guitar, and sat there and tried to not remember her songs, but work out her acoustic. She doesn't play the acoustic deal.
On stage a whole lot. Yeah, that's right.
She's just there trying to, you know, make it happen.
Yeah,
But it was an incredible show. I could tell she can get away with murder. She's very charming, and through some of her songs, when it was time for a solo, she would say, "I don't know how to play this, so this is the solo part," and she would hum along or you know, make a joke to how what a poor guitar player she is. But it was a heck of a show.
That's cool, man. Well, of course, I know you've been to Nashville a lot, mm-hmm. several over the years for business and all kinds of things. You are also a huge Jack White fan. White Stripes, Raconteurs, as I am, not as big as you.
Right.
I hate to sell Jack White. I totally burned his entire White Stripes catalog, but he can sue John Reynolds for that.
That's right. I've given him enough money.
My defense is I never would have really listened to all of it to the extent I have.
Right.
And I've since given him money through other means. So thank you, Jack. So you always, he's got his, is it Third Man Records?
Yeah,
down
Third
there?
Man Records.
The store
and
the studio.
Exactly.
Down there in the hood, down there in Nashville. I know you've been to that record store down there a lot, and he's got his studio down there, and you made a visit at his recording studio. Yeah. And they have like a little record shop.
Yeah, every
front,
time I go
right?
to Nashville, always I gotta go to Third Man. I'm gonna go buy a record or a poster.
Where else
or something.
Can you get a 45 of a White Stripes single
exactly.
on vinyl? You know, and that's where you go.
It's all there.
That's right. And this merch.
And it's just a real funky store.
Where is it? Like East Nashville, or is it downtown somewhere?
It's right off of downtown, but it's literally right next to the Mission and the bus and the bus stop.
Oh, okay.
Like, I mean, this is a rough part of Nashville.
Rough part of town. Is it advertised on the outside?
It
or is it just kind of a dark?
It is. It is.
Third Man. Okay.
Yeah, Third Man. He has three buildings there. He's got the studio. There's a storage building there. And then now he has Third Man Live, which is like a venue
of some kind. Cool.
And there's probably one show there a month.
Right.
And it's usually him.
A band with him in it, probably.
Yeah, him and like Jerry Lee Lewis.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Or him and like Wanda Jackson. You know, I mean, it's.
And White playing drums and bass. Like,
exactly.
What?
Just
like, yeah.
But me and a buddy of mine went over there. It was 5:00. It was our last day in Nashville, and I've had to make the stop, and I've had the absolute best luck on this whole trip.
Yeah.
I mean, the people that I met and that night we'd run into, and it was just an incredible trip. And literally, you know, we go up to the record store, and like I said, it's in a terrible neighborhood, and you have to ring. There's an intercom.
They got
to
buzz you in. Yeah.
You know, you buzz in. Like, the girl, the same girl who, you know, I've been there three other times, same lady's always there.
Works
like,
at the front.
Runs the store, you know.
Right.
And you buzz in, and she goes, "Hey, what do you want?" And very simply, we're like, "Hey, we're here to buy some records. Can you let us in?" She's like, "Sure, I'll send someone down." So my buddy are sitting there, and a few minutes are passing. I'm looking over. You can see where they're loading in or loading out the big organ is coming out.
Hammond organ.
It's being loaded out into Jack's truck. He has this truck that
you can't mistake
it.
It's
red. It's black with red, all red interior, but it's their shop truck. It's what they move stuff around.
Yeah.
And so there's something happening, you know, there. And
there's activity.
There's something going on.
Right.
And so. A few minutes pass, and then the front door, you know, opens up, and it's Jack White.
This is going through my mind.
Exactly.
Seven Nation Army couldn't hold me back.
It just kind of blew my mind, you know, after this.
You're just like, whoa.
Week.
Yeah, just.
I had this incredible week of meeting all these people, and, you know, it just
was
really.
Was he in a suit with a pork pie hat or anything? I was in a full, you know.
He looked as normal as Jack White could look. You know, jeans like a army jacket or something and a t-shirt, you know, not a suit, but just as normal as.
So he just kind of kicks the door open. He goes,
"Come
hey.
On in, guys." And I just go, I look at him and I go, "Holy crap, it's Jack White. How's it going, Jack?"
Yeah.
"How's it going?" And, you know, we just said a couple words to each other. And
yeah, you just say,
you know, and welcomed us in the store, and we went on in the store.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, that was a Friday, and that weekend is when he played Saturday Night Live. So that's what they're doing. They're loading up all the gear.
Getting all the gear, that's right.
Heading to New York to go play Saturday Night Live.
Jack White doesn't just show up with a laptop that's exactly modeled after Hammond B3 organ. He goes to his studio in Nashville, gets
pulls
the truck.
Right.
Wait a minute.
Somebody drive.
Is there organ on that song? One of the two songs playing on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Pick up that 1958 Hammond B3 organ. Right. Get me four guys. Load it in the truck.
Drive to
get it
country.
To New York City.
Right.
And put it on stage. And we're going to play our 3-minute song. And then we're going to take it back to the studio.
That's right.
That's the way it's done, man. How else are you going to do it?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, he is an auteur.
I know, yes. Love it, man. Well, man, what a great trip. CRS convention in Nashville, Tennessee. John Reynolds walking around, certainly someone in the business, but just passing himself off as some kind of industry bigwig.
Yeah, I was a carpetbagger.
Just eating lunch with Miranda and watching George Strait at the Ryman, meeting Jack White. Good grief. Go to his website, midlandcreative.com. Take a look at all the great work John's done in art, in videos, and design. And then tons and tons of cool pictures from his recent trip to Nashville, hanging out with all the people you need to know. Well, thanks for coming across the hall here, John. We need to do this more often.
We'll do it.
We're in here, and more to come on the podcast with John Reynolds, that's for sure. Well, thanks for listening, folks. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com, to book Phil Pritchett of the full band, or come record here at the studio. All you guys have been emailing me, wanting to know about dates and stuff. It's pretty booked up through June, but we do have stuff opening up, you know, July, August, late summer. We do have some stuff opened up for recording, booking, etc. So let me know what you need. Let me know what else I can do. Well, that's all the time we have for this week, folks, on the P2 podcast. We'll see you again next week. Take care out there. Much tougher.